Podcasts from the Cochrane Library, the latest evidence for healthcare decision-making.
Hello, I'm John Hilton, editor at the Cochrane Editorial Unit.
Blood transfusions are a very common medical procedure, and it's important to balance the potential benefits and harms. In October 2016, Jeffrey Carson from Rutgers Robert Wood Johnson Medical School in New Brunswick in the USA and colleagues updated the Cochrane Review of Research comparing different triggers for transfusing red blood cells, and we asked him to tell us more about the importance of the review and its findings.
Patients who are ill in the hospital are frequently anemic with low hemoglobin concentrations. The cause of anemia are diverse, including blood loss during surgery, excessive blood sampling from laboratory tests, and the consequence of some illnesses. Anemia decreases the oxygen content of the blood supply to the tissues and makes the heart work harder to deliver oxygen around the body. It's been associated with worse outcomes in patients who are anemic before surgery or who have cardiovascular disease. However, it doesn't necessarily follow that correcting anemia by the transfusion of red blood cells will improve outcomes. Anemia is generally well tolerated by many people, and therefore the benefits of red cell transfusion needs to be weighed against the potential harms. Although the main option for raising hemoglobin concentration rapidly in anemic patients is red blood cell transfusion, its availability and the potential harms vary throughout the world. In countries with well-regulated blood supplies, the safety of transfusion has improved significantly over the past 30 years, and the overall risks are very low. However, in resource-poor countries, blood transfusion is expensive, the supply of blood is inadequate, and the blood may not be safe because it's not often tested for viral pathogens. There are many randomized trials comparing different policies or schedules of using red cell transfusions. For instance, studies have randomized participants to restrictive transfusion triggers, which typically means that they are transfused only when their hemoglobin concentration falls to around 7 to 8 grams per deciliter, versus liberal transfusion when they are transfused at higher hemoglobin concentrations of around 9 to 10 grams per deciliter. Our review brings together the evidence from these trials. We are particularly interested in whether the results support the trend for increasing restrictive transfusion practices across all patient groups, and if transfusions can be withheld in some circumstances without harming patients. Since the last review in 2012, the number of relevant trials has increased such that the number of participants in these studies has more than doubled to 12,500. This made it important to update the review to ensure that the guidelines continue to be based on the most recent literature. Our review compares 30-day mortality and other clinical outcomes for restrictive versus liberal red blood cell transfusion thresholds for all conditions. We included randomized trials where intervention groups were assigned on the basis of a clear transfusion trigger described as a hemoglobin or hematocrit level below which a red blood cell transfusion was to be administered. 31 studies were eligible for inclusion. There were 10 trials in orthopedic surgery, 6 in critical care, 5 in acute blood loss or trauma, 5 in cardiac surgery, and smaller numbers in a variety of other conditions. The tested strategies were split fairly equally in regard to the hemoglobin concentration used to define the restrictive transfusion group. About half of the trials used a 7-gram threshold, while the others used a restrictive transfusion threshold of 8 to 9 grams per deciliter. When we examined the impact of restrictive transfusion strategies on transfusion frequency, we found that it reduced the risk of receiving a transfusion by 43% across a broad range of clinical specialties. Overall, restrictive transfusion strategies did not increase or decrease 30-day mortality compared with liberal transfusion strategies. And the results were little different when we divided the trials on the basis of the restrictive transfusion threshold. We also found no increase in risk from liberal or restrictive transfusion for outcomes such as cardiac events, myocardial infarction, stroke, and thromboembolism, or for infections like pneumonia, wound infection, or bacteremia. However, there were insufficient data to inform the safety of transfusion policies in certain clinical subgroups, including those with acute coronary syndrome, acute neurologic disorders, and patients with chronic forms of anemia. In summary, restrictive transfusion reduced the frequency of transfusion without harming the patients compared to liberal transfusion in a broad range of medical disorders. Our findings provide good evidence that transfusions with red blood cells can be avoided in most patients with hemoglobin concentrations above 7 to 8 grams per deciliter.
If you would like to read more about the thresholds that have been used and the review's detailed findings for many clinical outcomes, go to cochranelibrary.com and search simply for transfusion thresholds.